Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to another Patreon podcast. Today we're going to be diving into a bit of a complicated and sobering topic based on a lecture, Chester, who's here in the studio with us, Chester Weaver, who's a board member with Anabaptist Perspectives. You did a lecture on what we called the Mennonite Nazis. That's episode 98 up on our main channel on YouTube and through our podcast. And a very sobering piece of our history where we had, you know, very many Mennonites in Nazi Germany who sided with the Nazi regime in various forms. That got a lot of feedback, obviously, because this is a very sober topic, and how do we handle this piece of our history that's kind of complex? So we're going to be unpacking that based on various comments and feedback we got from our audience, which is one of the things we do here on the Patreon page, is respond to you guys. So we're always looking for feedback from you and would love to hear your thoughts. Also in the studio is Marlon Summers, who's part of Anabaptist Perspectives as well, and we'll have a roundtable about some of this. So just to start us off, here's a few of the comments that came in. One of them from Rebecca said, "Wonderful and bold. Thank you for sharing." I'm guessing this is a chunk of history that at least some people are definitely not aware of, and maybe we should talk about it more. Daniel said, "The opening statement is powerful!" Exclamation point. Chester, do you remember the opening statement of that lecture?
I suppose that it was the comment that we older people owe you younger people a debt, and I'm going to be paying or trying to pay some of that debt today.
Mm-hmm. That debt of, here's something from our history that we dare not forget. Yeah. Yeah. And then the one, how do you pronounce this name again?
Heiko.
So Heiko commented and said, "Many Mennonites rescued Jews in the wartime," referring to World War II. "The Mennonites hid the Jews on the big Mennonite farms. My father hid a Jewish woman in his house." Now, we were looking it up. That is a German name, so I'm assuming this is someone from Germany. It'd be very interesting if that person's listening. Maybe they could email us. We'd love to hear more about that story. It sounds fascinating. And that is true. Chester, you probably know more about this than I do, but definitely different ones of the church, the Mennonites, whatever, did hide Jews, did in some ways try to save lives as best they could. But at the same time, there's also some dark portions of the history where that wasn't done. Yeah, let's discuss it. What do you know of this topic?
Unfortunately, the German Mennonites, who spent 100 years losing their non-resistance, losing a sense of dedicated loyalty to Christ, were willing to buy into the Nazi propaganda. And I think that probably the majority collaborated with the Nazi regime, and it's only a minority that hid the Jews on their farms. I think since this other terrible story is being unveiled, I think it would be good if the people who actually did hide Jews would reveal those stories. We need to hear both sides. From what I've studied so far, the Mennonites hiding Jews are far in the minority compared to those who collaborated with the Nazi regime.
Yeah, and that was in, so a little bit of backstory. I wrote a paper as part of my graduating process when I was at Sharon Mennonite Bible Institute a few years ago. And that paper I did was on the Mennonite Nazis, the two kingdom concept, where did our people go wrong in this whole process? And I uncovered some very sad things regarding the Mennonites and how they treated the Jews. And, you know, and like this person said, I mean, obviously here's testimony of someone who did hide Jews, did the right thing. But there are many cases where that simply did not happen. One of the people I interviewed was Ruth Reimer, which is Ruth Yoder now, but she lives in Pennsylvania. And her father, as a Mennonite, was an SS officer in Hitler's army. Now, not just a regular soldier, but elite, you know, part of the elite forces for, Hitler's regime. Now, did not do active combat, as far as they know, but at one point actually was one of the guards for Hitler's palace. He had multiple palaces, but there was one, multiple times where he would guard for Hitler himself, and carried his SS pocketbook, which was hand-signed by Adolf Hitler. Really bizarre to think this happened, and they were in, you know, reasonably good standing in the Mennonite church at the time. One of the things she mentioned that really blew my mind, and I actually have the interview recorded, where she said there was a concentration camp relatively close to where they lived in Prussia, and they would often have Jews come by to help them work on the farm, you know? And at the time, you know, she's fairly young, but at the time it was just like, okay, cool, like free labor basically, which is horrible. And in retrospect, looking back, like, why did we, how could we ever possibly justify doing that? And it just was kind of what you did. I don't know. Have you heard of reports like that? I mean, it sounded like that was something that was fairly normal in that region.
That is correct. Stutthof was the concentration camp located near Danzig, among Mennonite farms. And I understand that the slave labor was used to build the buildings there at Stutthof, as well as the Mennonites being guards and managers of those concentration work details.
Mm-hmm. Which was one of the things I'll just quote from my paper here. Where some of the research I had found, which we can link sources in the description for some of this too if people want to look into it more, but that concentration camp was constructed in 1939, and a Mennonite builder was the contractor for that. He served as some sort of general contractor to the SS, and I'm quoting here from a paper I had found, assuming responsibility for the construction of all buildings on the premises. It is not much of an exaggeration to say that a Mennonite built the barracks for the first concentration camp on non-German soil. And again, we can put these references in the description. And then there was, you know, some were tried for war crimes after the war. So it's not like this was, you know, this was some, there was actual evidence to put them on trial for these things. That same camp that you mentioned used its prisoners for slave labor, and some of the local farmers used the Jews for cheap labor. And then again, quoting from that same paper, it has also become clear that Mennonite farmers and businessmen exploited the available inexpensive labor provided by these prisoners without any apparent moral, you know, resistance, I guess you could say, or like someone saying, hey, this is objectionable, this is not right.
The reason they did that is they switched from the gospel of Christ to the gospel of Nazism. They switched from Jesus being the savior to Adolf Hitler being the savior.
Hmm. Oh, that's powerful though. Wow. Wow. And so, one of the things I, again, uncovered in that same area in Danzig, where the Jews were literally rounded up in that town and executed and shot, the Mennonites of that town never protested or attempted to stop that. Some of the commando teams responsible recruited volunteers from the local residents to help with the task. And there's eyewitness testimony, which, you know, take or leave, I guess, but there is eyewitness accounts that say some of those recruited to help round up the Jews were young Mennonite men.
Yes, that is correct.
And the question is, how does a people get to that place? Now, I can see patriotic nationalism is at one level, but actually rounding up people or assisting with something like that for their imminent execution is a whole nother level. Where did the Mennonites get this idea? Okay, of such so hatred.
We should understand that by losing their non-resistance, they lost Christ. That's a very bold statement, but they lost Christ. Nobody could do the things that they ended up doing with Christ present. That's not the way people who have Christ in them behave or think. And so they had to be willing to surrender the Christ of their history to adopt a false Christ, and which is what they did.
Yeah, I want to push back a little bit on your claim that this is a whole other level than patriotic nationalism. I mean, okay, yes, it's beyond patriotic nationalism. But when you put two things together, the one is this a very strong patriotism and nationalism and identity as this country, and we have to preserve our identity. And then you put that together with the fact that it's very easy to ignore what doesn't affect you directly. What you don't directly see, what you don't directly sense, you know, out of sight, out of mind, that gets you a lot of places pretty quickly.
And so you're saying that being a Christian has a Christian worldview that flows into all the cracks and crannies of all of life. And we have to think and work out of a total picture rather than an isolated, fragmented picture.
Yeah, and that's hard to do.
But that's wholeness. That is not dualism. That's the opposite of dualism. And I think that's the call that Christ has for us.
And one of the things I want to be careful with is here we sit in a comfortable place in America. We have all our needs met, and we're 80 years removed, we're almost 80 years removed from some of these events. And it's very easy to be critical of those people at that time. And we've never walked through those things. You know, we don't necessarily know how we or the people around us would respond to something so extreme. And this is why these lessons really matter, to actually think through these things before something extreme comes along and understand and process where you stand before you get caught off guard and get whipped in and, you know, herd mentality almost. Like, groupthink is a very, very powerful force. And if there's not people have thought through, here's where we stand and here's why it matters and we won't compromise on these things, you know, something like this is theoretically possible again for our people.
The illustration of that is in this last election, many Anabaptists decided that things are so bad now we have to vote for Trump. So if we're all willing to do that when times are easy, what are we going to be willing to do when we're under pressure?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, depending on how things could have went or could still go in this country, it would have been easy for me to see, oh yeah, Mennonites getting wrapped up in some things that may have actually been fairly violent and, you know, not accepting certain things and wanting to, this whole fight for your rights thing and all of that.
Well, when we think about this issue, what we have to keep in mind that the two kingdom concept is a very foundational issue in the gospel. And if we are thoroughly thinking in terms of the two kingdoms, that will help us both in easy times and hard times to navigate our way. But if we get back to trying to fix a one kingdom, that's where we're going to be losers. And that's what happened to the German Mennonites. They shifted from their two kingdom concept to an effort to fix the world through a one kingdom.
Wow, they traded something so glorious for something so horrid and pointless and temporary, really.
And then they had to come to terms with the demons of their own making after it was over. How are you supposed to correct that in your mind? How do you process that?
I think I'm going to read another quote here that I had found in my research as well. That just helps get a picture of why were the Jews wrapped up in this? Why did the Mennonites get wrapped up in this? It says, the Mennonites who had survived the Stalinist purges were strongly inclined to admire Hitler, the anti-Stalin, and were often quite willing to join any Nazi organization as a kind of reflexive, passionate action. And I think it's very important to realize Hitler came to power in 1933. Those first 6 years that he was in power were not militant, at least not overtly so. This is well before the war. So they had years of just simple political involvement that did not involve violence. At least in a systematic way, towards these people. Continuing on with the quote, many Mennonite survivors of the Stalinist terror and deportation campaigns expressed voracious hatred for both Jews and communists as equivalent evils. Mennonites generally resented, envied, and despised Jews because so many of them seemed to have been found in the ranks of the Soviet secret police and the Communist Party, as well as among the supervisors and managers of collective farms. It was easy to regard Jews as part of the Soviet class enemy on whom raw revenge could now be extracted under the guise of, quote, official police work. The doctrine of non-resistance had long been surrendered in favor of nationalistic loyalty to the fatherland. So it feels almost like a perfect storm came together. They're already losing non-resistance in the two kingdoms. The Soviet Union, and this is something especially us in America don't quite realize, because Russia was an ally during World War II, but Russia was really brutal and a very serious force of evil that the Germans were attempting to retaliate against. And then what do you do when you have two such extreme evils? Well, you end up with a world war. And we kind of fail to realize how horrific that was for many of our people. And slowly over time, what do you end up with? Well, the Mennonite Nazis that we talk about today.
And the attempt to overcome evil with evil.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly.
Well, we can never cover everything that should be said in a little short time like this, but there are men like Gerhard Rempel who have done research on this and uncovered and have written about what they've uncovered. But I think Gerhard is no longer living. But the newest figure on the scene is Ben Goossen, G-O-O-S-S-E-N, from Harvard, who is churning out constantly new findings. And one of the persons who actually listened to the Anabaptist Perspective Project, episode 98, wrote a paper for her Liberty University class. Her name is Aaliyah Schrock, and I'm asking her if she's willing to publish her findings as a result of this. And so there is more being uncovered all the time.
Mm-hmm. And with right along with that, Ruth Yoder's story of growing up in Nazi Germany and her father joining, which I have the book right here. I can't find the exact, I don't know, it's in here somewhere where there's a family photo and he's in uniform, you know, and it just feels so bizarre seeing this nice Mennonite family smiling on their farm and their father's in an SS uniform. And this book was recently published, I don't know, a year or two ago. Interestingly enough, I'm friends with the author. And we were driving somewhere, and we were talking about the Mennonite Nazis. And I said, oh, yeah, well, I know someone who walked through this, et cetera, et cetera. And they're like, oh, really? What's her name? Where's she from? And I said, you know, Ruth Yoder from, I think it's Grantsville or something, Maryland. And Gert, which is the author, said, oh, my, I know her. Like, we're friends. This is amazing. I didn't know that story was there. We need to write it into a book. And that's how this book came about. And so I would encourage you all to pick this up, too. It gives another a different slice, a biography of what that time was like for those people. And it was, you know, again, we can sit here and say this was right, this was wrong. But, you know, in the moment, these were very, very difficult things to live through. And it's helpful for us to understand these things.
Let me make a comment. My daughter and her husband moved to Uruguay, and I had understood that some of the Mennonites, when they were chased out of Germany, went to Uruguay. And so since my daughter lived there, when I'm down to visit her, I wanted to visit with these former Mennonite Nazis just to see what their attitudes were like today. And so we drove to their place, a man by the name of John Claussen. I could not speak Spanish, so we had interpreters, but they were most welcome. Come in. And by a conversation with them in their house, I discovered that their attitudes are anything but Nazi. And he said his mother was 15 whenever they were chased out by the Russian armies. And she said this whole concept of hatred for Jews and hatred for humanity and the 1,000-year German Reich, she said that was all bad. We don't need to pursue that. We don't have to think like that. And so I think that prepared those people at least. And so we don't want to characterize all Mennonites for having equal attitudes of hatred for Jews and collaborators, because there were some silent people who didn't buy into the system. They just kind of were trapped by the system.
Well, I think that concludes for this one. But this is going to be a three-part series on the Mennonite Nazis, and we'll be hitting different aspects of it. So this is the first section on the Jewish and how they handled working with the Jews and things. The next one will be on the Bolsheviks. And then the third one will be on what can we learn today from these lessons. So recommend looking out for those. Hopefully we'll be releasing them soon. And we'd love to hear your feedback. If you know of more information on this topic, or if you have questions about something that was covered in this episode, we would love to hear from you. And as always, thanks so much for your support. Anabaptist Perspectives wouldn't be possible without it, so we thank you. And as always, you can find all our content over on our website at anabaptistperspectives.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.